By 2050, global forecasts for clean hydrogen production have just been slashed by 45%. Yet other analysts predict the market will surge to over $168 billion by 2035. So which is it? A stalled revolution or the biggest clean energy opportunity of the decade? This week, we cut through the noise to find out what's really happening on the ground. Welcome to Troy Technical Intelligence, your weekly briefing on the technology shaping global industry. I'm Susie. Every week, I'm joined by our expert analyst, Troy, to translate complex developments into actionable business strategy. Troy, this week, the signals on the green hydrogen economy are wildly contradictory. We're seeing massive government investments and project announcements, but also serious warnings about high costs and policy delays. What's the real story for executives trying to plan their next move?
Susie, it's the classic dynamic of a nascent transformative industry. The long-term vision is pulling in trillions in projected investment, but the short-term reality is hitting practical roadblocks. The key is to distinguish the hype from the deployable, funded reality. We're seeing a clear divergence between nations that are accelerating with strategic funding and those facing geopolitical or economic headwinds. The winners are building the supply chains of tomorrow, right now.
Let's start with those roadblocks. A new analysis from Forbes this week paints a pretty cautious picture, citing policy instability and high costs. What are the specific hurdles that are causing these production forecasts to be revised downward so sharply?
The two main impediments, confirmed by a King's Research report on August 7th, are cost and infrastructure. First, the capital expenditure for electrolyzers, the core technology for producing green hydrogen, is still substantial. According to the IEA data they cited, electrolyzer manufacturing capacity actually doubled to 25 gigawatts per year in 2023, but market deployment remains low. That's the cost gap in action. The second hurdle is the lack of transport and distribution networks to get the hydrogen from production centers to industrial users.
So, for a US or European manufacturer, what does this mean? If I want to use green hydrogen to decarbonize my factory, am I just stuck waiting?
Not stuck. But you must be strategic. The high cost of on-site electrolyzer infrastructure means you shouldn't plan a full-scale conversion overnight. The risk is that a more efficient, cheaper technology emerges in a few years, stranding your capital. The immediate opportunity is in pilot projects, especially if you can get co-funding from regional or national grants.
And for trading companies and distributors, is it too early to get into the hydrogen market?
For the molecule itself, large-scale trading is premature in most regions. The opportunity right now is in the enabling technology, distributing the picks and shovels of this gold rush. The electrolyzers, the storage tanks, the control systems is a much more concrete, near-term business. The demand for that hardware is growing, even if the end-to-end supply chains are still being built.
So, what's the actionable insight here?
Executives should moderate their timelines, acknowledge the gap between long-term potential and the current reality of high costs and infrastructure deficits. Focus on phased adoption. Your first step should be to secure a position in a government-supported industrial cluster to de-risk your initial investment in hydrogen technology.
That brings us to government action. It seems some nations are pushing ahead aggressively despite the challenges. Japan just made a huge move, didn't they?
A decisive one. On July 30th, Japan committed $2.7 billion to launch the world's first commercial liquid hydrogen supply chain. This isn't just a research project, it's a full-scale industrial strategy. Kawasaki Heavy Industries is being tasked to build the world's largest liquid hydrogen carrier, and a massive 50,000 cubic meter import terminal is planned.
$2.7 billion is a powerful signal. How does this compare to what's happening in Europe?
Europe is matching that ambition, but with a more pan-national, state-by-state approach. Just this week, on August 7th, Spain allocated over 274 million euros for four renewable hydrogen projects, totaling over 102 megawatts of electrolysis capacity. At the same time, the European Commission approved a 780 million euro Dutch scheme to support green hydrogen production. This is state-sponsored de-risking in action.
We're also seeing this on a project level in the UK, right?
Exactly. Protium, a UK developer, just secured planning approval on August 7th for its 15-megawatt Cromarty green hydrogen facility in Scotland. Crucially, it's supported by the UK government's HAR1 subsidy contract. This isn't a speculative venture. It's a state-backed project designed to supply affordable green hydrogen directly to regional industries.
This all seems to contrast sharply with news out of Russia. S&P Global reported on July 31st that most of their low-carbon hydrogen projects are delayed or canceled.
It's a stark example of how geopolitics is shaping this industry. Russia had plans for 1.2 million metric tons of capacity, but S&P reports these are on hold due to mounting costs, restricted access to Western technology, specifically electrolyzers, and a collapse in export opportunities to Europe.
So, how does this geopolitical map affect U.S. and European manufacturers?
It means the competitive landscape is being defined by government strategy, not just corporate efficiency. European manufacturers located near hubs like Cromarty in Scotland or the Ghent H2 nucleus project in Germany will have a first-mover advantage with access to subsidized, locally produced green hydrogen. This will become a significant production cost advantage over the next decade. U.S. manufacturers should be aggressively lobbying for and locating within the Department of Energy's designated hydrogen hubs to gain similar benefits from the Inflation Reduction Act.
What should trading companies and distributors take away from this?
Two things. First, Japan's investment signals a massive, predictable import market for liquid hydrogen is forming. This creates a long-term opportunity for sourcing partnerships, likely from the U.S., Australia, or the Middle East. Second, the cancellation of Russian projects tightens the future supply of low-carbon hydrogen, increasing the strategic value of projects in politically stable regions like North America and Europe.
So the action item for executives?
Map your current and future operations against these emerging state-sponsored hydrogen ecosystems. The subsidies and infrastructure being built today will dictate the energy cost structures of tomorrow. Begin conversations with hub developers like Protium in the UK or participants in Germany's Ghent H2 project to understand their supply timelines and costs.
Let's zoom in on the technology itself. We've mentioned electrolyzers a few times. The U.S. Department of Energy just published a detailed overview on August 4th. What are the key differences business leaders need to understand?
The DOE outlined the three main technologies. Alkaline electrolyzers are the mature, lower-cost option. Polymer electrolyte membrane, or PEM, electrolyzers are more expensive but react faster, which is critical for pairing with intermittent renewables like wind and solar. And solid oxide electrolytic cells, SOEC, are a high-temperature, high-efficiency technology best for industrial settings with waste heat.
We're seeing PEM technology deployed in a major cross-border project, correct?
Yes, a very significant one. On August 4th, UK-based ITM Power delivered one of its UK-manufactured PEM electrolyzers to the Ghent H2 nucleus project at RWE's plant in Lingen, Germany. This has already initiated the first hydrogen production for what will become Germany's national hydrogen pipeline backbone. It's a perfect example of specialized UK tech enabling Germany's massive industrial strategy.
Beyond a standard electrolyzer, are there more novel production methods on the horizon?
Absolutely. On August 7th, UrecAlert reported that chemists at Ohio State University are pioneering a method to generate hydrogen from industrial waste, like steel mill slag. This is a potential game changer, turning a disposal liability into a fuel-generating asset.
And we are even seeing new energy sources being used.
Correct. In Indonesia, PT Pertamina Geothermal Energy, or PGEO, announced on August 4th that it will begin producing green hydrogen using geothermal power by the end of 2026. This is significant because geothermal provides stable 24/7 baseload power, overcoming the intermittency issues of solar and wind. Their first secured customer is Toyota.
This is all great for production, but how do you get the fuel to the vehicles?
That's where critical infrastructure comes in. On August 5th, Bulk Transporter reported that High Road Energy deployed a mobile liquid hydrogen fueling station in Southern California. It's an all-in-one unit with a 1,000-kilogram tank that can be moved to support commercial hydrogen truck fleets where fixed infrastructure doesn't exist yet.
So, for U.S. and European manufacturers, what's the key technological insight?
The choice of electrolyzer technology is a direct trade-off between capital cost and operational flexibility. If you have stable power, alkaline might suffice. If you're using renewables, PEM is superior. And if you're in heavy industry, watch the development of waste-to-hydrogen and SOEC technologies very closely.
And for trading and distribution companies?
The market is segmenting. There are opportunities to become a specialized distributor for specific technologies, like ITM Power's PEM stacks or the integrated mobile fueling units from High Road Energy. Understanding the technical pros and cons is now a requirement for sales and business development.
What's the actionable insight for executives this week?
Conduct a technology scouting audit. Task your engineering and strategy teams to evaluate which of these emerging production and distribution technologies, PEM, waste to hydrogen, geothermal, mobile fueling, best aligns with your company's specific operational footprint and decarbonization goals.
Troy, an incredibly complex but fascinating picture this week. Let's distill it all down. What are the three key strategic takeaways for executives in the U.S. and Europe?
First, plan for a phased transition. The market growth is real, but so are the short-term cost and infrastructure hurdles. Your hydrogen strategy should be built on milestones over the next 10 years, not an overnight switch. Start with pilot projects in subsidized regions.
Second,
follow the national strategies. Japan, the US, the UK, Germany, Spain, and the Netherlands are using billions in public funds to create hydrogen hotspots. These hubs will offer the first commercially viable, price-advantaged green hydrogen. Aligning your operations with these locations is the single most important strategic decision you can make in this space right now.
And the final takeaway?
Focus on the enabling infrastructure. The biggest near-term growth is not in using hydrogen, but in building the capacity to produce, store, and distribute it. For manufacturers, this means exploring partnerships with tech providers for on-site production. For trading companies, it means becoming a critical supplier of the high-tech components that the entire ecosystem needs to function. The opportunity is in the hardware.
Troy, thank you for clarifying the landscape. It's clear that while the challenges are real, the strategic investments being made right now are laying the groundwork for a massive industrial shift.
Exactly. The key is to act on the concrete, funded projects, not the speculative forecasts.
That's all the time we have for this week's briefing. Join us again next week for more Troy Technical Intelligence. To make sure you never miss an episode, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for listening.